her old home. They'd already lost a lot of time, and Percy didn't like how fast the sun was rising. The road curved around the hillside, but it looked like they could get to town faster going straight across the meadows. Percy stepped off the road. "Come on." The ground was squishy, but he didn't think much about it until Hazel shouted, "Percy, no!" His next step went straight through the ground. He sank like a stone until the earth closed over his head, and the earth swallowed him. Chapter 41 Hazel.
"Your bow!" Hazel shouted.
Frank didn't ask questions. He dropped his pack and slipped the bow off his shoulder. Hazel's heart raced. She hadn't thought about this boggy soil, muskeg, since before she had died. Now, too late, she remembered the dire warnings the locals had given her. Marshy silt and decomposed plants made a surface that looked completely solid, but it was even worse than quicksand. It could be 20 feet deep or more, and impossible to escape. She tried not to think what would happen if it were deeper than the length of the bow.
"Hold one end," she told Frank. "Don't let go."
She grabbed the other end, took a deep breath, and jumped into the bog. The earth closed over her head. Instantly, she was frozen in a memory.
"Not now," she wanted to scream. "Ella said I was done with blackouts."
"Oh, but my dear," said the voice of Gia, "this is not one of your blackouts. This is a gift from me."
Hazel was back in New Orleans. She and her mother sat in the park near their apartment, having a picnic breakfast. She remembered this day. She was 7 years old. Her mother had just sold Hazel's first precious stone, a small diamond. Neither of them had yet realized Hazel's curse. Queen Marie was in an excellent mood. She had bought orange juice for Hazel and champagne for herself, and beignets sprinkled with chocolate and powdered sugar. She'd even bought Hazel a new box of crayons and a pad of paper. They sat together, Queen Marie humming cheerfully while Hazel drew pictures. The French Quarter woke up around them, ready for Mardi Gras. Jazz bands practiced. Floats were being decorated with fresh-cut flowers. Children laughed and chased each other. Decked in so many colored necklaces, they could barely walk. The sunrise turned the sky to red gold, and the warm, steamy air smelled of magnolias and roses. It had been the happiest morning of Hazel's life.
"You could stay here," her mother smiled, but her eyes were blank white. The voice was Gia's.
"This is fake," Hazel said.
She tried to get up, but the soft bed of grass made her lazy and sleepy. The smell of baked bread and melting chocolate was intoxicating. It was the morning of Mardi Gras, and the world seemed full of possibilities. Hazel could almost believe she had a bright future.
"What is real?" asked Gia,
speaking through her mother's face.
"Is your second life real, Hazel? You're supposed to be dead. Is it real that you're sinking into a bog, suffocating?"
"Let me help my friend."
Hazel tried to force herself back to reality. She could imagine her hand clenched on the end of the bow, but even that was starting to feel fuzzy. Her grip was loosening. The smell of magnolias and roses was overpowering. Her mother offered her a beignet.
"No," Hazel thought. "This isn't my mother. This is Gia tricking me."
"You want your old life back," Gia said. "I can give you that. This moment can last for years. You can grow up in New Orleans, and your mother will adore you. You'll never have to deal with the burden of your curse. You can be with Sammy."
"It's an illusion,"
Hazel said, choking on the sweet scent of flowers.
"You are an illusion, Hazel Levesque. You were only brought back to life because the gods have a task for you. I may have used you, but Nico used you and lied about it. You should be glad I captured him."
"Captured?"
A feeling of panic rose in Hazel's chest.
"What do you mean?"
Gia smiled, sipping her champagne.
The boy should have known better than to search for the doors. But no matter, it's not really your concern. Once you release Thanatos, you'll be thrown back into the underworld to rot forever. Frank and Percy won't stop that from happening. Would real friends ask you to give up your life? Tell me who is lying and who tells you the truth.
Hazel started to cry. Bitterness welled up inside her. She'd lost her life once. She didn't want to die again.
That's right. Gia purred. You were destined to marry Sammy. Do you know what happened to him after you died in Alaska? He grew up and moved to Texas. He married and had a family. But he never forgot you. He always wondered why you disappeared. He's dead now, a heart attack in the 1960s. The life you could have had together always haunted him.
Stop it, Hazel screamed. You took that from me.
And you can have it again, Gia said. I have you in my embrace, Hazel. You'll die anyway. If you give up, at least I can make it pleasant for you. Forget saving Percy Jackson. He belongs to me. I'll keep him safe in the earth until I'm ready to use him. You can have an entire life in your final moments. You can grow up, marry Sammy. All you have to do is let go.
Hazel tightened her grip on the bow. Below her, something grabbed her ankles, but she didn't panic. She knew it was Percy, suffocating, desperately grasping for a chance at life. Hazel glared at the goddess.
I'll never cooperate with you. Let us go.
Her mother's face dissolved. The New Orleans morning melted into darkness. Hazel was drowning in mud, one hand on the bow, Percy's hands around her ankles, deep in the darkness. Hazel wiggled the end of the bow frantically. Frank pulled her up with such force it nearly popped her arm out of the socket. When she opened her eyes, she was lying in the grass covered in muck. Percy sprawled at her feet, coughing and spitting mud. Frank hovered over them, yelling,
Oh gods! Oh gods! Oh gods!
He yanked some extra clothes from his bag and started toweling off Hazel's face, but it didn't do much good. He dragged Percy farther from the muskeg.
You were down there so long, Frank cried. I didn't think... Oh gods, don't ever do something like that again.
He wrapped Hazel in a bear hug.
Can't breathe, she choked out.
Sorry.
Frank went back to toweling and fussing over them. Finally he got them to the side of the road, where they sat and shivered and spit up mud clods. Hazel couldn't feel her hands. She wasn't sure if she was cold or in shock, but she managed to explain about the muskeg and the vision she'd seen while she was under. Not the part about Sammy. That was still too painful to say out loud. But she told them about Gia's offer of a fake life, and the goddess's claim that she'd captured her brother Nico. Hazel didn't want to keep that to herself. She was afraid the despair would overwhelm her. Percy rubbed his shoulders. His lips were blue.
You saved me, Hazel. We'll figure out what happened to Nico, I promise.
Hazel squinted at the sun, which was now high in the sky. The warmth felt good, but it didn't stop her trembling.
Does it seem like Gia let us go too easily?
Percy plucked a mud clod from his hair.
Maybe she still wants us as pawns. Maybe she was just saying things to mess with your mind.
She knew what to say, Hazel agreed. She knew how to get to me.
Frank put his jacket around her shoulders.
This is a real life. You know that, right? We're not going to let you die again.
He sounded so determined. Hazel didn't want to argue, but she didn't see how Frank could stop death. She pressed her coat pocket, where Frank's half-burned firewood was still securely wrapped. She wondered what would have happened to him if she'd sunk in the mud forever. Maybe that would have saved him. Fire couldn't have gotten to the wood down there. She would have made any sacrifice to keep Frank safe. Perhaps she hadn't always felt that strongly, but Frank had trusted her with his life. He believed in her. She couldn't bear the thought of any harm coming to him. She glanced at the rising sun. Time was running out. She thought about Hilla, the Amazon queen back in Seattle. Hilla would have dueled Otrera 2 nights in a row by now, assuming she had survived. She was counting on Hazel to release death. She managed to stand. The wind coming off Resurrection Bay was just as cold as she remembered.
We should get going. We're losing time.
Percy gazed down the road. His lips were returning to their normal color.
Any hotels or something where we could clean off? I mean, hotels that accept mud people?
I'm not sure, Hazel admitted.
She looked at the town below and couldn't believe how much it had grown since 1942. The main harbor had moved east as the town had expanded. Most of the buildings were new to her, but the grid of downtown streets seemed familiar. She thought she recognized some warehouses along the shore.
I might know a place we can freshen up.
Chapter 42. Hazel. When they got into town, Hazel followed the same route she'd used 70 years ago, the last night of her life, when she'd come home from the hills and found her mother missing. She led her friends along Third Avenue. The railroad station was still there. The big white 2-story Seward Hotel was still in business, though it had expanded to twice its old size. They thought about stopping there, but Hazel didn't think it would be a good idea to traipse into the lobby covered in mud, nor was she sure the hotel would give a room to 3 minors. Instead, they turned toward the shoreline. Hazel couldn't believe it, but her old home was still there, leaning over the water on barnacle-encrusted piers. The roof sagged. The walls were perforated with holes like buckshot. The door was boarded up, and a hand-painted sign read, "Rooms," crossed out, "Storage," crossed out, "Available."
"Come on," she said.
You sure it's safe?" Frank asked.
Hazel found an open window and climbed inside. Her friends followed. The room hadn't been used in a long time. Their feet kicked up dust that swirled in the buckshot beams of sunlight. Moldering cardboard boxes were stacked along the walls. Their faded labels read, "Greeting cards, assorted, seasonal." Why several hundred boxes of season's greetings had wound up crumbling to dust in a warehouse in Alaska, Hazel had no idea. But it felt like a cruel joke, as if the cards were for all the holidays she'd never gotten to celebrate. Decades of Christmases, Easters, birthdays, Valentines.
"It's warmer in here, at least," Frank said. "Guess no running water? Maybe I can go shopping. I'm not as muddy as you guys. I could find us some clothes."
Hazel only half heard him. She climbed over a stack of boxes in the corner that used to be her sleeping area. An old sign was propped against the wall, "Gold Prospecting Supplies." She thought she'd find a bare wall behind it. But when she moved the sign, most of her photos and drawings were still pinned there. The sign must have protected them from sunlight and the elements. They seemed not to have age. Her crayon drawings of New Orleans looked so childish. Had she really made them? Her mother stared out at her from one photograph, smiling in front of her business sign, "Queen Marie's Gree-Gree, Charms Sold, Fortunes Told." Next to that was a photo of Sammy at the carnival. He was frozen in time with his crazy grin, his curly black hair, and those beautiful eyes. If Gia was telling the truth, Sammy had been dead for over 40 years. Had he really remembered Hazel all that time? Or had he forgotten the peculiar girl he used to go riding with, the girl who shared one kiss and a birthday cupcake with him before disappearing forever? Frank's fingers hovered over the photo.
"Who?"
He saw that she was crying and clamped back his question.
"Sorry, Hazel. This must be really hard. Do you want some time?"
"No," she croaked. "No, it's fine."
"Is that your mother?"
Percy pointed to the photo of Queen Marie.
"She looks like you. She's beautiful."
Then Percy studied the picture of Sammy.
"Who is that?"
Hazel didn't understand why he looked so spooked.
That's Sammy. He was my, friend from New Orleans.
She forced herself not to look at Frank.
I've seen him before, Percy said. You couldn't have, Hazel said. That was in 1941. He's probably dead now.
Percy frowned.
I guess. Still.
He shook his head, like the thought was too uncomfortable. Frank cleared his throat. Look, we passed a store on the last block. We've got a little money left. Maybe I should go get you guys some food and clothes and, I don't know, 100 boxes of wet wipes or something? Hazel put the gold prospecting sign back over her mementos. She felt guilty even looking at that old picture of Sammy, with Frank trying to be so sweet and supportive. It didn't do her any good to think about her old life.
That would be great, she said. You're the best, Frank.
The floorboards creaked under his feet. Well, I'm the only one not completely covered in mud anyway. Be back soon. Once he was gone, Percy and Hazel made temporary camp. They took off their jackets and tried to scrape off the mud. They found some old blankets in a crate and used them to clean up. They discovered that boxes of greeting cards made pretty good places to rest if you arrange them like mattresses. Percy set his sword on the floor where it glowed with a faint bronze light. Then he stretched out on a bed of Merry Christmas 1982.
Thank you for saving me, he said. I should have told you that earlier.
Hazel shrugged.
You would have done the same for me.
Yes, he agreed.
But when I was down in the mud, I remembered that line from Ella's prophecy about the son of Neptune drowning. I thought, this is what it means. I'm drowning in the earth. I was sure I was dead.
His voice quavered like it had his first day at Camp Jupiter when Hazel had shown him the shrine of Neptune. Back then, she had wondered if Percy was the answer to her problems, the descendant of Neptune that Pluto had promised would take away her curse someday. Percy had seemed so intimidating and powerful, like a real hero. Only now, she knew that Frank was a descendant of Neptune, too. Frank wasn't the most impressive-looking hero in the world, but he'd trusted her with his life. He tried so hard to protect her. Even his clumsiness was endearing. She'd never felt more confused, and since she had spent her whole life confused, that was saying a lot.
Percy, she said, that prophecy might not have been complete. Frank thought Ella was remembering a burned page. Maybe you'll drown someone else.
He looked at her cautiously.
You think so?
Hazel felt strange reassuring him. He was so much older and more in command, but she nodded confidently.
You're going to make it back home. You're going to see your girlfriend, Annabeth.
You'll make it back too, Hazel, he insisted. We're not going to let anything happen to you. You're too valuable to me, to the camp, and especially to Frank.
Hazel picked up an old valentine. The lacy white paper fell apart in her hands.
I don't belong in this century. Nico only brought me back so I could correct my mistakes. Maybe get into Elysium.
There's more to your destiny than that, he said. We're supposed to fight Gia together. I'm going to need you at my side way longer than just today. And Frank, you can see the guy is crazy about you. This life is worth fighting for, Hazel.
She closed her eyes.
Please, don't get my hopes up. I can't...
The window creaked open. Frank climbed in, triumphantly holding some shopping bags.
Success!
He showed off his prizes. From a hunting store, he'd gotten a new quiver of arrows for himself, some rations, and a coil of rope.
For the next time we run across muskeg, he said.
From a local tourist shop, he had bought 3 sets of fresh clothes, some towels, some soap, some bottled water, and yes, a huge box of wet wipes. It wasn't exactly a hot shower, but Hazel ducked behind a wall of greeting card boxes to clean up and change. Soon she was feeling much better.
This is your last day, she reminded herself. Don't get too comfortable.
The Feast of Fortuna. All the luck that happened today, good or bad, was supposed to be an omen of the entire year to come. One way or another, their quest would end this evening. She slipped the piece of driftwood into her new coat pocket. Somehow she'd have to make sure it stayed safe, no matter what happened to her. She could bear her own death as long as her friends survived.
So, she said, now we find a boat to Hubbard Glacier.
She tried to sound confident, but it wasn't easy. She wished Orion were still with her. She'd much rather ride into battle on that beautiful horse. Ever since they'd left Vancouver, she'd been calling to him in her thoughts, hoping he would hear her and come find her. But that was just wishful thinking. Frank patted his stomach.
If we're going to battle to the death, I want lunch first.
I found the perfect place. Frank led them to a shopping plaza near the wharf, where an old railway car had been converted to a diner. Hazel had no memory of the place from the 1940s, but the food smelled amazing. While Frank and Percy ordered, Hazel wandered down to the docks and asked some questions. When she came back, she needed cheering up. Even the cheeseburger and fries didn't do the trick.
"We're in trouble," she said. "I tried to get a boat, but I miscalculated."
"No boats?" Frank asked.
"Oh, I can get a boat," Hazel said. "But the glacier is farther than I thought. Even at top speed, we couldn't get there until tomorrow morning."
Percy turned pale. "Maybe I could make the boat go faster?"
"Even if you could," Hazel said, "from what the captains tell me, it's treacherous. Icebergs, mazes of channels to navigate. You'd have to know where you were going."
"A plane?" Frank asked.
Hazel shook her head.
"I asked the boat captains about that. They said we could try, but it's a tiny airfield. You have to charter a plane 2-3 weeks in advance."
They ate in silence after that. Hazel's cheeseburger was excellent, but she couldn't concentrate on it. She'd eaten about 3 bites when a raven settled on the telephone pole above and began to croak at them. Hazel shivered. She was afraid it would speak to her like the other raven so many years ago.
"The last night. Tonight."
She wondered if ravens always appeared to children of Pluto when they were about to die. She hoped Nico was still alive, and Gia had just been lying to make her unsettled. Hazel had a bad feeling that the goddess was telling the truth. Nico had told her that he'd search for the doors of death from the other side. If he'd been captured by Gia's forces, Hazel might have lost the only family she had. She stared at her cheeseburger. Suddenly, the raven's cawing changed to a strangled yelp. Frank got up so fast that he almost toppled the picnic table. Percy drew his sword. Hazel followed their eyes. Perched on top of the pole, where the raven had been, a fat, ugly griffin glared down at them. It burped, and raven feathers fluttered from its beak. Hazel stood and unsheathed her spatha. Frank knocked an arrow. He took aim, but the griffin shrieked so loudly the sound echoed off the mountains. Frank flinched, and his shot went wide.
"I think that's a call for help," Percy warned. "We have to get out of here."
With no clear plan, they ran for the docks. The griffin dove after them. Percy slashed at it with his sword, but the griffin veered out of reach. They took the steps to the nearest pier and raced to the end. The griffin swooped after them, its front claws extended for the kill. Hazel raised her sword, but an icy wall of water slammed sideways into the griffin and washed it into the bay. The griffin squawked and flapped its wings. It managed to scramble onto the pier, where it shook its black fur like a wet dog. Frank grunted.
"Nice one, Percy."
"Yeah," he said. "Didn't know if I could still do that in Alaska. But bad news. Look over there."
About a mile away, over the mountains, a black cloud was swirling. A whole flock of griffins, dozens at least. There was no way they could fight that many, and no boat could take them away fast enough. Frank knocked another arrow.
"Not going down without a fight."
Percy raised Riptide.
"I'm with you."
Then Hazel heard a sound in the distance, like the whinnying of a horse. She must have been imagining it, but she cried out desperately,
"Orion, over here!"
A tan blur came ripping down the street and onto the pier. The stallion materialized right behind the griffin, brought down his front hooves, and smashed the monster to dust. Hazel had never been so happy in her life.
Good horse! Really good horse!
Frank backed up and almost fell off the pier.
How?
He followed me, Hazel beamed, because he's the best horse ever. Now get on.
All three of us? Percy said. Can he handle it?
Orion whinnied indignantly.
All right, no need to be rude, Percy said. Let's go.
They climbed on, Hazel in front, Frank and Percy balancing precariously behind her. Frank wrapped his arms around her waist, and Hazel thought that if this was going to be her last day on Earth, it wasn't a bad way to go out.
Run, Orion, she cried, to Hubbard Glacier.
The horse shot across the water, his hooves turning the top of the sea to steam. Chapter 43 Hazel. Riding Orion, Hazel felt powerful, unstoppable, absolutely in control. A perfect combination of horse and human. She wondered if this was what it was like to be a centaur. The boat captains in Seward had warned her it was 300 nautical miles to the Hubbard Glacier, a hard, dangerous journey, but Orion had no trouble. He raced over the water at the speed of sound, heating the air around them so that Hazel didn't even feel the cold. On foot, she never would have felt so brave. On horseback, she couldn't wait to charge into battle. Frank and Percy didn't look so happy. When Hazel glanced back, their teeth were clenched and their eyeballs were bouncing around in their heads. Frank's cheeks jiggled from the G-force. Percy sat in back, hanging on tight, desperately trying not to slip off the horse's rear. Hazel hoped that didn't happen. The way Orion was moving, she might not notice he was gone for 50 or 60 miles. They raced through icy straits, past blue fjords and cliffs with waterfalls spilling into the sea. Orion jumped over a breaching humpback whale and kept galloping, startling a pack of seals off an iceberg. It seemed like only minutes before they zipped into a narrow bay. The water turned the consistency of shaved ice in blue, sticky syrup. Orion came to a halt on a frozen turquoise slab. A half a mile away stood Hubbard Glacier. Even Hazel, who'd seen glaciers before, couldn't quite process what she was looking at. Purple snow-capped mountains marched off in either direction, with clouds floating around their middles like fluffy belts. In a massive valley between two of the largest peaks, a ragged wall of ice rose out of the sea, filling the entire gorge. The glacier was blue and white with streaks of black, so that it looked like a hedge of dirty snow left behind on a sidewalk after a snowplow had gone by, only 4 million times as large. As soon as Orion stopped, Hazel felt the temperature drop. All that ice was sending off waves of cold, turning the bay into the world's largest refrigerator. The eeriest thing was a sound like thunder that rolled across the water.
What is that?
Frank gazed at the clouds above the glacier.
A storm?
No, Hazel said. Ice cracking and shifting. Millions of tons of ice.
You mean that thing is breaking up?
Frank asked. As if on cue, a sheet of ice silently calved off the side of the glacier and crashed into the sea, spraying water and frozen shrapnel several stories high. A millisecond later, the sound hit them. A boom, almost as jarring as Orion hitting the sound barrier.
We can't get close to that thing, Frank said.
We have to, Percy said. The giant is at the top.
Orion nickered.
Geez, Hazel, Percy said. Tell your horse to watch his language.
Hazel tried not to laugh.
What did he say?
With the cussing removed, he said he can get us to the top.
Frank looked incredulous.
I thought the horse couldn't fly.
This time Orion whinnied so angrily, even Hazel could guess he was cursing.
Dude, Percy told the horse, I've gotten suspended for saying less than that. Hazel, he promises you'll see what he can do as soon as you give the word.
Hold on then, you guys, Hazel said nervously. Orion, giddy up.
Orion shot toward the glacier like a runaway rocket, barreling straight across the slush like he wanted to play chicken with a mountain of ice. The air grew colder. The crackling of the ice grew louder. As Orion closed the distance, the glacier loomed so large, Hazel got vertigo just trying to take it all in. The side was riddled with crevices and caves, spiked with jagged ridges like axe blades. Pieces were constantly crumbling off, some no larger than snowballs, some the size of houses. When they were about 50 yards from the base, a thunderclap rattled Hazel's bones, and a curtain of ice that would have covered Camp Jupiter calved away and fell toward them. "Look out!" Frank shouted, which seemed a little unnecessary to Hazel. Orion was way ahead of him. In a burst of speed, he zigzagged through the debris, leaping over chunks of ice and clambering up the face of the glacier. Percy and Frank both cussed like horses and held on desperately, while Hazel wrapped her arms around Orion's neck. Somehow, they managed not to fall off as Orion scaled the cliffs, jumping from foothold to foothold with impossible speed and agility. It was like falling down a mountain in reverse. Then it was over. Orion stood proudly at the top of a ridge of ice that loomed over the void. The sea was now 300 feet below them. Orion whinnied a challenge that echoed off the mountains. Percy didn't translate, but Hazel was pretty sure Orion was calling out to any other horses that might be in the bay. "Beat that, you punks!" Then he turned and ran inland across the top of the glacier, leaping a chasm 50 feet across. "There!" Percy pointed. The horse stopped. Ahead of them stood a frozen Roman camp, like a giant-sized, ghastly replica of Camp Jupiter. The trenches bristled with ice spikes. The snow-brick ramparts glared blinding white. Hanging from the guard towers, banners of frozen blue cloth shimmered in the Arctic sun. There was no sign of life. The gates stood wide open. No sentries walked the walls. Still, Hazel had an uneasy feeling in her gut. She remembered the cave in Resurrection Bay, where she'd worked to raise Alcyoneus, the oppressive sense of malice and the constant boom, 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 like Gia's heartbeat. This place felt similar, as if the earth were trying to wake up and consume everything, as if the mountains on either side wanted to crush them and the entire glacier to pieces. Orion trotted skittishly. "Frank," Percy said, "how about we go on foot from here?" Frank sighed with relief. "Thought you'd never ask." They dismounted and took some tentative steps. The ice seemed stable, covered with a fine carpet of snow so that it wasn't too slippery. Hazel urged Orion forward. Percy and Frank walked on either side, sword and bow ready. They approached the gates without being challenged. Hazel was trained to spot pits, snares, trip lines, and all sorts of other traps Roman legions had faced for eons in enemy territory, but she saw nothing, just the yawning icy gates and the frozen banners crackling in the wind. She could see straight down the Via Praetoria. At the crossroads, in front of the snow-brick Principia, a tall, dark-robed figure stood, bound in icy chains. "Thanatos," Hazel murmured. She felt as if her soul were being pulled forward, drawn toward death like dust toward a vacuum. Her vision went dark. She almost fell off Orion, but Frank caught her and propped her up. "We've got you," he promised. "Nobody's taking you away." Hazel gripped his hand. She didn't want to let go. He was so solid, so reassuring, but Frank couldn't protect her from death. His own life was as fragile as a half-burned piece of wood. "I'm all right," she lied. Percy looked around uneasily. "No defenders? No giant? This has to be a trap." "Obviously," Frank said, "but I don't think we have a choice." Before Hazel could change her mind, she urged Orion through the gates. The layout was so familiar. Cohort barracks, baths, armory. It was an exact replica of Camp Jupiter, except 3 times as big. Even on horseback, Hazel felt tiny and insignificant, as if they were moving through a model city constructed by the gods. They stopped 10 feet from the robed figure. Now that she was here, Hazel felt a reckless urge to finish the quest. She knew she was in more danger than when she'd been fighting the Amazons, or fending off the Griffins, or climbing the glacier on Orion's back. Instinctively, she knew that Thanatos could simply touch her, and she would die. But she also had a feeling that if she didn't see the quest through, if she didn't face her fate bravely, she would still die. In cowardice and failure. The judges of the dead wouldn't be lenient to her a second time. Orion cantered back and forth, sensing her disquiet.
Hello?
Gazel forced out the word.
Mr. Death?
The hooded figure raised his head. Instantly, the whole camp stirred to life. Figures in Roman armor emerged from the barracks, the principia, the armory, and the canteen, but they weren't human. They were shades, the chattering ghosts Hazel had lived with for decades in the fields of Asphodel. Their bodies weren't much more than wisps of black vapor, but they managed to hold together sets of scale armor, greaves, and helmets. Frost-covered swords were strapped to their waists. Pila and dented shields floated in their smoky hands. The plumes on the centurion's helmets were frozen and ragged. Most of the shades were on foot, but two soldiers burst out of the stables in a golden chariot pulled by ghostly black steeds. When Orion saw the horses, he stamped the ground in outrage. Frank gripped his bow.
Yep, here's the trap.
Chapter 44. Hazel. The ghosts formed ranks and encircled the crossroads. There were about 100 in all, not an entire legion, but more than a cohort. Some carried the tattered lightning bolt banners of the 12th Legion, 5th Cohort, Michael Varus's doomed expedition from the 1980s. Others carried standards and insignia Hazel didn't recognize, as if they'd died at different times, on different quests, maybe not even from Camp Jupiter. Most were armed with Imperial gold weapons, more Imperial gold than the entire 12th Legion possessed. Hazel could feel the combined power of all that gold humming around her, even scarier than the crackling of the glacier. She wondered if she could use her power to control the weapons, maybe disarm the ghosts, but she was afraid to try. Imperial gold wasn't just a precious metal. It was deadly to demigods and monsters. Trying to control that much at once would be like trying to control plutonium in a reactor. If she failed, she might wipe Hubbard Glacier off the map and kill her friends.
Thanatos! Hazel turned to the robed figure. We're here to rescue you. If you control these shades, tell them...
Her voice faltered. The god's hood fell away and his robes dropped off as he spread his wings, leaving him in only a sleeveless black tunic belted at the waist. He was the most beautiful man Hazel had ever seen. His skin was the color of teak wood, dark and glistening like Queen Marie's old seance table. His eyes were as honey gold as Hazel's. He was lean and muscular, with a regal face and black hair flowing down his shoulders. His wings glimmered in shades of blue, black, and purple. Hazel reminded herself to breathe. Beautiful was the right word for Thanatos, not handsome or hot or anything like that. He was beautiful the way an angel is beautiful. Timeless, perfect, remote.
Oh,
she said in a small voice. The god's wrists were shackled in icy manacles, with chains that ran straight into the glacier floor. His feet were bare, shackled around the ankles and also chained.
It's Cupid, Frank said.
A really buff Cupid, Percy agreed.
You compliment me.
Thanatos said. His voice was as gorgeous as he was, deep and melodious.
I am frequently mistaken for the god of love. Death has more in common with love than you might imagine. But I am death, I assure you.
Hazel didn't doubt it. She felt as if she were made of ashes. Any second she might crumble and be sucked into the vacuum. She doubted Thanatos even needed to touch her to kill her. He could simply tell her to die. She would keel over on the spot, her soul obeying that beautiful voice and those kind eyes.
We're here to save you, she managed. Where's Alcyoneus?
Save me? Thanatos narrowed his eyes. Do you understand what you are saying, Hazel Levesque? Do you understand what that will mean?
Percy stepped forward.
We're wasting time.
He swung his sword at the god's chains. Celestial bronze rang against the ice, but Riptide stuck to the chain like glue. Frost began creeping up the blade. Percy pulled frantically. Frank ran to help. Together they just managed to yank Riptide free before the frost reached their hands.
That won't work, Thanatos said simply. As for the giant, he is close. These shades are not mine, they are his.
Thanatos's eyes scanned the ghost soldiers. They shifted uncomfortably, as if an arctic wind were rattling through their ranks.
So how do we get you out? Hazel demanded.
Thanatos turned his attention back to her.
Daughter of Pluto, child of my master, you of all people should not wish me released.
Don't you think I know that?
Hazel's eyes stung, but she was done being afraid. She'd been a scared little girl 70 years ago. She'd lost her mother because she acted too late. Now she was a soldier of Rome. She wasn't going to fail again. She wasn't going to let down her friends.
Listen, Death.
She drew her cavalry sword, and Orion reared in defiance.
I didn't come back from the underworld and travel thousands of miles to be told that I'm stupid for setting you free. If I die, I die. I'll fight this whole army if I have to. Just tell us how to break your chains.
Thanatos studied her for a heartbeat.
Interesting. You do understand that these shades were once demigods like you. They fought for Rome. They died without completing their heroic quests. Like you, they were sent to Asphodel. Now Gia has promised them a second life if they fight for her today. Of course, if you release me and defeat them, they will have to return to the underworld where they belong. For treason against the gods, they will face eternal punishment. They are not so different from you, Hazel Levesque. Are you sure you want to release me and damn these souls forever?
Frank clenched his fists.
That's not fair. Do you want to be freed or not?
Fair, Death mused. You'd be amazed how often I hear that word, Frank Jong, and how meaningless it is. Is it fair that your life will burn so short and bright? Was it fair when I guided your mother to the underworld?
Frank staggered like he'd been punched.
No, Death said sadly. Not fair, and yet it was her time. There is no fairness in death. If you free me, I will do my duty. But of course these shades will try to stop you.
So if we let you go, Percy summed up, we get mobbed by a bunch of black vapor dudes with gold swords. Fine. How do we break those chains?
Thanatos smiled.
Only the fire of life can melt the chains of death.
Without the riddles, please,
Percy asked. Frank drew a shaky breath.
It isn't a riddle.
Frank, no, Hazel said weakly. There's got to be another way.
Laughter boomed across the glacier. A rumbling voice said,
My friends, I've waited so long.
Standing at the gates of the camp was Alcyoneus. He was even larger than the giant Polybetes they'd seen in California. He had metallic golden skin, armor made from platinum links, and an iron staff the size of a totem pole. His rust-red dragon legs pounded against the ice as he entered the camp. Precious stones glinted in his red braided hair. Hazel had never seen him fully formed, but she knew him better than she knew her own parents. She had made him. For months, she had raised gold and gems from the earth to create this monster. She knew the diamonds he used for a heart. She knew the oil that ran in his veins instead of blood. More than anything, she wanted to destroy him. The giant approached, grinning at her with his solid silver teeth.
Ah, Hazel Levesque, he said. You cost me dearly. If not for you, I would have risen decades ago, and this world would already be Gia's. But no matter.
He spread his hands, showing off the ranks of ghostly soldiers.
Welcome, Percy Jackson. Welcome, Frank Jong. I am Alcyoneus, the Bane of Pluto, the new Master of Death. And this is your new legion.
Chapter 45 Frank. No fairness in death. Those words kept ringing in Frank's head. The golden giant didn't scare him. The army of shades didn't scare him. But the thought of freeing Thanatos made Frank want to curl into the fetal position. This god had taken his mother. Frank understood what he had to do to break those chains. Mars had warned him. He'd explained why he loved Emily Jong so much.
She always put her duty first, ahead of everything, even her life.
Now it was Frank's turn. His mother's sacrifice medal felt warm in his pocket. He finally understood his mother's choice, saving her comrades at the cost of her own life. He got what Mars had been trying to tell him.
Duty, sacrifice, they mean something.
In Frank's chest, a hard knot of anger and resentment, a lump of grief he'd been carrying since the funeral, finally began to dissolve. He understood why his mother never came home. Some things were worth dying for.
Hazel? He tried to keep his voice steady. That package you're keeping for me? I need it.
Hazel glanced at him in dismay. Sitting on Orion, she looked like a queen, powerful and beautiful. Her brown hair swept over her shoulders and a wreath of icy mist around her head.
Frank, no. There has to be another way.
Please. I know what I'm doing.
Thanatos smiled and lifted his manacled wrists.
You're right, Frank Jong. Sacrifices must be made.
Great. If death approved of his plan, Frank was pretty sure he wasn't going to like the results. The giant Alcyoneus stepped forward, his reptilian feet shaking the ground.
What package do you speak of, Frank Jong? Have you brought me a present?
Nothing for you, golden boy, Frank said, except a whole lot of pain.
The giant roared with laughter.
Spoken like a child of Mars. Too bad I have to kill you. And this one, my, my. I've been waiting to meet the famous Percy Jackson.
The giant grinned. His silver teeth made his mouth look like a car grill.
I've followed your progress, son of Neptune, said Alcyoneus. Your fight with Kronos. Well done. Gia hates you above all others. Except, perhaps, for that upstart Jason Grace. I'm sorry I can't kill you right away. But my brother Polybetes wishes to keep you as a pet. He thinks it will be amusing when he destroys Neptune to have the god's favorite son on a leash. After that, of course, Gia has plans for you.
Yeah, flattering, Percy raised Riptide. But actually, I'm the son of Poseidon. I'm from Camp Half-Blood.
The ghosts stirred. Some drew swords and lifted shields. Alcyoneus raised his hand, gesturing for them to wait.
Greek, Roman, it doesn't matter,
the giant said easily.
We will crush both camps underfoot. You see, the Titans didn't think big enough. They planned to destroy the gods in their new home of America. We giants know better. To kill a weed, you must pull up its roots. Even now. While my forces destroy your little Roman camp, my brother, Porphyrion, is preparing for the real battle in the ancient lands. We will destroy the gods at their source.
The ghosts pounded their swords against their shields. The sound echoed across the mountains.
The source? Frank asked. You mean Greece?
Alcyoneus chuckled.
No need to worry about that, son of Mars. You won't live long enough to see our ultimate victory. I will replace Pluto as Lord of the Underworld. I already have Death in my custody. With Hazel Levesque in my service, I will have all the riches under the earth as well.
Hazel gripped her spatha. I don't do service.
Oh, but you gave me life, Alcyonia said. True. We hope to awaken Gia during World War II. That would have been glorious. But really, the world is in almost as bad a shape now. Soon your civilization will be wiped out. The doors of death will stand open. Those who serve us will never perish. Alive or dead, you three will join my army.
Percy shook his head. Fat chance, golden boy. You're going down.
Wait! Hazel spurred her horse toward the giant. I raised this monster from the earth. I'm the daughter of Pluto. It's my place to kill him.
Ah, little Hazel.
Alcyonius planted his staff on the ice. His hair glittered with millions of dollars worth of gems.
Are you sure you will not join us of your own free will? You could be quite precious to us. Why die again?
Hazel's eyes flashed with anger. She looked down at Frank and pulled the wrapped-up piece of firewood from her coat.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
he said. She pursed her lips.
You're my best friend, too, Frank. I should have told you that.
She tossed him the stick.
Do what you have to. And Percy? Can you protect him?
Percy gazed at the ranks of ghostly Romans.
Against a small army? Sure, no problem. Then I've got Golden Boy, Hazel said.
She charged the giant. Chapter 46 Frank. Frank unwrapped the firewood and knelt at the feet of Thanatos. He was aware of Percy standing over him, swinging his sword and yelling in defiance as the ghosts closed in. He heard the giant bellow and Orion whinny angrily, but he didn't dare look. His hands trembling, he held his piece of tinder next to the chains on Death's right leg. He thought about flames, and instantly the wood blazed. Horrible warmth spread through Frank's body. The icy metal began to melt, the flame so bright it was more blinding than the ice.
Good, Thanatos said. Very good, Frank Jong.
Frank had heard about people's lives flashing before their eyes, but now he experienced it literally. He saw his mother the day she left for Afghanistan. She smiled and hugged him. He tried to breathe in her jasmine scent so he'd never forget it.
I will always be proud of you, Frank, she said. Someday you'll travel even farther than I. You'll bring our family full circle. Years from now, our descendants will be telling stories about the hero, Frank Jong. Their great, great, great...
She poked him in the belly for old time's sake. It would be the last time Frank smiled for months. He saw himself at the picnic bench in Moose Pass, watching the stars and the northern lights as Hazel snored softly beside him. Percy sang,
Frank, you are a leader. We need you.
He saw Percy disappearing into the muskeg, then Hazel diving after him. Frank remembered how alone he had felt holding on to the bow, how utterly powerless. He had pleaded with the Olympian gods, even Mars, to help his friends, but he knew they were beyond the gods' reach. With a clank, the first chain broke. Quickly, Frank stabbed the firewood at the chain on Death's other leg. He risked a glance over his shoulder. Percy was fighting like a whirlwind. In fact, he was a whirlwind. A miniature hurricane of water and ice vapor churned around him as he waded through the enemy, knocking Roman ghosts away, deflecting arrows and spears. Since when did he have that power? He moved through the enemy lines, and even though he seemed to be leaving Frank undefended, the enemy was completely focused on Percy. Frank wasn't sure why. Then he saw Percy's goal. One of the black vapory ghosts was wearing the lion's skin cape of a standard bearer and holding a pole with a golden eagle, icicles frozen to its wings. The Legion's standard.
Frank watched as Percy plowed through a line of legionnaires, scattering their shields with his personal cyclone. He knocked down the standard-bearer and grabbed the eagle.
"You want it back?"
he shouted at the ghosts.
"Come and get it!"
He drew them away, and Frank couldn't help being awed by his bold strategy. As much as those shades wanted to keep Thanatos chained, they were Roman spirits. Their minds were fuzzy at best, like the ghosts Frank had seen in Asphodel. But they remembered one thing clearly. They were supposed to protect their eagle. Still, Percy couldn't fight off that many enemies forever. Maintaining a storm like that had to be difficult. Despite the cold, his face was already beaded with sweat. Frank looked for Hazel. He couldn't see her or the giant.
"Watch your fire, boy," Death warned. "You don't have any to waste."
Frank cursed. He'd gotten so distracted he hadn't noticed the second chain had melted. He moved his fire to the shackles on the god's right hand. The piece of tinder was almost half gone now. Frank started to shiver. More images flashed through his mind. He saw Mars sitting at his grandmother's bedside, looking at Frank with those nuclear explosion eyes.
"Your Juno's secret weapon. Have you figured out your gift yet?"
He heard his mother say, "You can be anything." Then he saw grandmother's stern face, her skin as thin as rice paper, her white hair spread across her pillow.
"Yes, Fai Zhong, your mother was not simply boosting your self-esteem. She was telling you the literal truth."
He thought of the grizzly bear his mother had intercepted at the edge of the woods. He thought of the large black bird circling over the flames of their family mansion. The third chain snapped. Frank thrust the tinder at the last shackle. His body was racked with pain. Yellow splotches danced in his eyes. He saw Percy at the end of the Via Principalis holding off the army of ghosts. He'd overturned the chariot and destroyed several buildings, but every time he threw off a wave of attackers in his hurricane, the ghosts simply got up and charged again. Every time Percy slashed one of them down with his sword, the ghost reformed immediately.
Percy had backed up almost as far as he could go. Behind him was the side gate of the camp, and about 20 feet beyond that, the edge of the glacier.
As for Hazel, she and Alcyoneus had managed to destroy most of the barracks in their battle. Now they were fighting in the wreckage at the main gate. Orion was playing a dangerous game of tag, charging around the giant while Alcyoneus swiped at them with his staff, knocking over walls and cleaving massive chasms in the ice. Only Orion's speed kept them alive. Finally, Death's last chain snapped. With a desperate yelp, Frank jabbed his firewood into a pile of snow and extinguished the flame. His pain faded. He was still alive. But when he took out the piece of tinder, it was no more than a stub, smaller than a candy bar. Thanatos raised his arms.
"Free," he said with satisfaction.
"Great."
Frank blinked the spots from his eyes.
"Then do something."
Thanatos gave him a calm smile.
"Do something? Of course, I will watch. Those who die in this battle will stay dead."
"Thanks,"
Frank muttered, slipping his firewood into his coat.
"Very helpful."
"You're most welcome," Thanatos said agreeably.
"Percy!"
Frank yelled.
"They can die now!"
Percy nodded understanding, but he looked worn out. His hurricane was slowing down. His strikes were getting slower. The entire ghostly army had him surrounded, gradually forcing him toward the edge of the glacier. Frank drew his bow to help. Then he dropped it. Normal arrows from a hunting store in Seward wouldn't do any good. Frank would have to use his gift. He thought he understood his powers at last. Something about watching the firewood burn, smelling the acrid smoke of his own life, had made him feel strangely confident.
"Is it fair your life burns so short and bright?"
Death had asked.
"No such thing is fair," Frank told himself. "If I'm going to burn, it might as well be bright."
He took one step toward Percy. Then, from across the camp, Hazel yelled in pain. Orion screamed as the giant got a lucky shot. His staff sent horse and rider tumbling over the ice, crashing into the ramparts.
Hazel!
Frank glanced back at Percy, wishing he had his spear. If he could just summon